deep to right field. And Nelson Cruz goes to the opposite field to tie the game. His 11th home run of the year. And it's one apiece. High fly, right center field. Going back is Naquin. That ball is gone. He hits Flo in right field.
Like he got a changeup and just clobbered it the other way.
Ooh, biggest Twins win of the year, perhaps, last night? Biggest Twins win of the year?
I'll give that some thought.
Okay. We'll break a Twins game down, maybe the Twins' biggest win down, like it's a football game. Also, old tweets exposed from Declan. He will throw us under the bus, as he does every single Tuesday. I feel like we've probably, now that we've got accountability session on Fridays and old tweets exposed on Tuesdays, I feel like, what's the math there? 40% of the show is just set up to make us look like idiots.
Correct.
But is there something wrong with that?
It's probably an accurate portrayal.
I was going to say, I have no problem with that, actually.
Federated Mutual Insurance Company is one of our partners here at Score North and on the Mackey and Judd Show. We appreciate that, and we appreciate all the help that they've been dishing out to business owners during this pandemic year across the state of Minnesota and beyond. Federated helps you block risks and helps shield you against everyday challenges that could land your business in a tough spot. You can find out more about the resources Federated provides, and you can find out more about your local representative at federatedinsurance.com. Remember, at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackey and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
Ball, but I think he went.
How did he lay off that? Yes, he did.
Splitter in the dirt. Another strikeout. Another 3-2 to Lindor. Got him. Five really good innings tonight again for Kenta Maeda.
All right, let's break a Twins baseball game down like it's a football game.
Football.
We got reckless speculation to get to. Old tweets exposed. Was that the biggest Twins win of the year? I'm going to say yes.
Yes, 100%.
Wait.
It's the football season.
Okay, sports dad.
Let's give this a little bit more thought. Give this a little bit more thought because they also played very well against Cleveland at home. I would say that was the most, maybe that might be the most fun I've had watching a Twins game. And I think the reason is because Sunday was such a piece of crap that I actually came back last night and thought, that's a good game. I mean, that's a good game. Can I ask you guys a question, though, to start off with? Okay, Maeda last time out against the Brewers is brilliant, right? Like, he's probably going to do that once a year or so. I mean, he's just fantastic, off the charts. And then the narrative, at least Fox Sports North post game, was, well, Maeda wasn't as good this time around.
Oh, we're ripping the broadcast out of the game.
Why would we expect him to be? You know what? He went on the road and pitched really well. No, but I mean, the guy pitched really well. I'm the one that brings the heat on players, or Phil does. But in this case, like, okay, he didn't pitch as well as he did when he almost threw a no-hitter. Of course he didn't.
I'd be honest, I didn't watch the post-game show last night. I was I was early to bed right after the game was over. So what was the threat? Was this Lauds?
Lauds was saying this, but he wasn't really. He was just trying to say he didn't have as good of stuff, but why would you expect him to?
I feel like Lauds' World Series ring gets bigger every time he's on TV. It's going to be like a giant spaceship on his hand tomorrow night. But Maeda almost threw a no-hitter.
Maeda threw really well last night for a road game in a situation like that. I thought that was one hell of a good pitching performance. Didn't you guys? Am I missing something here?
Solid.
There's no question.
Really good.
No
okay.
Question.
And I thought he could have thrown six. He threw five. I would have probably put him out there for the sixth.
So that to me, would, if there is a Maeda question, it would be, all right, you've already used your bullpen a million times this year. You have at least one, maybe even two rotation spots right now that are just bullpen game. And last night, I think a lot of people paused when they saw Maeda just rolling in the middle inning. Seven strikeouts, one run, five hits. He hit the early speed bump and then smoothed it out. 83 pitches through five innings. Why not bring him out there? I love this decision. This is a great long-term smart decision by this front office and by Rocco Baldelli. Don't throttle him toward 100 pitches 5 days after he hit a career high and almost threw a no-hitter. I get that, like, however many pitches he threw, I think it was 115 or 120 pitches in chase of a no-hitter, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. The most pitches he's ever thrown in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
I get that it wasn't necessarily 120 high-stress pitches because it wasn't like guys are on second and third and he's got to hulk this fastball over. It was a pretty smooth-sailing 120 pitches last time out, but it was still 120 pitches. And their idea to keep him under 85 or whatever they had in their minds is smart because you need this guy. It no longer matters. Like, throwing a no-hitter would have been cool. This game against the Indians, it's important. It's the biggest win of the season. But if they would have lost it because they pulled him an inning earlier than they otherwise would have, it doesn't, like, shipwreck your playoff chances.
No.
Kenta Maeda right
nothing,
now is your number. He's your number one starter in a playoff series, and he should just be as comfortable and healthy as possible going into the last month.
I would have brought him up to start the sixth.
For what purpose?
I would have. Well,
if it's the biggest win of the season, then it's still important.
Correct. But it's
I would have brought him out to start the sixth and then
gauge from
there.
It's also important to keep him healthy and to not, you know, if you run him out there, you're basically committing. If you pitch him for another full inning, you're committing to 100 pitches.
But here's the problem. They are incredibly predictable in how they're going to use their bullpen, which is absolutely fine, that part. But they are also predictable in the fact that they are skittish to use guys too much. So you're starting pitching from here on. It's basically right now goes Maeda, Dobnik, Berríos. My fingers are crossed, okay? So my bullpen might become more and more important. And at some point in time, somebody's going to have to pitch more than I want. So I'm just saying I would have brought Maeda pitching like he was out to start the sixth. And then if it starts to go sideways a bit, take him out from there. If you had a rotation of guys that I could rely on to ordinarily be getting me through five or through six right now, I would defer to what you said, Phil, but you can't. And at some point, they're going to have to pick their poison here. Like, they're going to be forced to make big boy decisions they don't like.
But I think their formula, like, their bullpen.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying this is a small tweak. Baseball is football.
Okay, well, that's fair. Their bullpen has been overly taxed.
Right.
But I would rather overly tax Caleb Thielbar and then send him to, like, the fake injured list for a week than overly tax Kenta Maeda.
No, but if they're going to
have him unavailable for 2 weeks or the playoffs.
Sure. No, if they're going to start to do that and abuse people regularly that they should abuse, applaud them. What I'm seeing, though, is a team that really doesn't like to do that unless it's hopeless. And then they're like, you know what? Screw Sean Poppin. You're going to throw five. We don't care. No, if they choose to make the decision based on the people of this employee is a pretty good employee, but let's abuse him, then I am all for it. But I need to see that consistently.
Okay, my last case, and then I'll shut up and Declan can break the tie here. But I think if you're on the fence, all right, he's at 83 pitches. We'd really prefer to keep him just like 90, maybe 95 tops. We don't want him throwing 100 pitches in back-to-back outings because he just make fun of new fangled pitching philosophies all you want. But like, Kenta Maeda is not the type of guy that throws 100 pitches in back-to-back starts. He's just not. Make fun of him, whatever you want. Like, it's not a smart move. It's not a smart move.
I wouldn't make fun of him. I'm not making fun of him.
But some people are, you the man back in my day. I used to throw 190 pitches
on beers and hot dogs.
Yeah.
Well, Jack and Bert did.
Morris.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So Bert.
So if you're on the fence going into the sixth inning, what are you more likely to regret in the sixth inning? Oh my God, he has. Nah. Now he's okay. He's like seven pitches into this first batter, and the guy keeps fouling pitches off. Already got the out, but now he's at 93. But there's no one on base. Okay, like, and you let it get away to 100, or you pull him an inning early. Like, I think likely to regret pulling
him in. I'm not fighting you here.
Early.
I'm just saying if, as we like to break down the minutia of these games, this is just a this is a small point.
Okay,
this is not a huge debate.
Tie. Leave him in or take him out. Did make a mistake?
I would have trotted him out for the six.
Oh, you guys.
I would have trotted him out for the six.
Right,
but with
a couple of dusty Bakers.
120. We're going to 120, Dex.
But with a quick hook. With a quick hook ready to
fine.
Get him out. And also, Thielbar comes out, gives up a leadoff double, and I'm thinking, what the hell is Caleb Thielbar doing in the sixth inning of this game? So I was a little confused by that to start with from the get-go.
I feel like, I've kind of been in the same boat with Thielbar, like, oh man, why is Thielbar here in a close game? The guy was like bagging groceries 2 months ago. But they see something in these pitchers. Like, he did strike, his three outs were strikeouts in that inning last night. He did allow a couple of hits. So he did have to do some gymnastics to get out of the inning. But they clearly see something in him, and I tend to just trust this front office and their evaluation. So,
all right.
Football.
Miguel Sano with the big opposite field home run last night. He was 1-for-4 with the 2-run homer, a couple of strikeouts, which if you hit a ball that far in a spot like that, you can strike out in the other plate appearances.
He had Flo.
He did.
He took Flo out.
I've never been more happy.
Poor Flo.
Man, Flo, going to need a Band-Aid after that one.
Where's Jamie?
So Miguel Sano is now up to 241. He's got, I believe his OPS is 830, if my quick math is right here. And he now has extra base hits. Is it 8 consecutive games? So Miguel Sano, 6 home runs, 14 RBIs. And I got dunked on last night by so many people because of, and by the way, Judd's in this boat too, but I feel like I put the strong tweets out sometimes and they come back to bite me, whereas Judd might couch the tweet.
Yeah, Tuesdays not come back at to the end him. Of every show is this the exact reason why we does exist.
And we're going to get to that.
Okay.
So I tweeted out on August 21st, 4 days ago. Someone said, because he was hot for like 4 games at that point, do you admit you jumped off the Sano ship a little too soon? First of all, this is all relative.
Yeah.
At no point have I jumped off the Sano ship. In fact, my stance on Sano remains the same, and this is what I responded with. He's a good but streaky power hitter with very few other valuable Major League Baseball skills. He hits bombs in an era where a ton of guys hit bombs. He's not even one of the 10 most important players on the Twins. He's basically, as I said, a right-handed, less durable version of Adam Dunn with more strikeouts and probably a better glove at first base. Definitely worth having on the team, but also replaceable. That's my Sano take. Nick Nelson from Twins Daily chimes in. He screenshotted those two. It's very easy, by the way, during the hottest week of a guy's life to do this. And he said, this is going to go down in the Bad Takes Hall of Fame. Laugh crying emoji. Okay, feed it to me straight, you guys. Is my Sano take, should it be up for consideration for Bad Takes Hall of Fame?
No. Most definitely not. And here's
should I apologize to Miguel Sano?
No, because again, your tweets, he saw them, and it lit a fire there, which congratulations. The thing about Sano and his defenders is, I guess I have one question. Where are you when he's 0 for his last 35 and struck out 34 times? Like, that's my question. Is you got to be both ways here. You got to tell me, hey, look, these strikeouts are great. They're the greatest strikeouts I've seen. These outs are very productive. You don't understand outs. Like, tell me that and I'll laugh. But no, he is who he is. We talked about this yesterday, and when he's going well, he's bound for Cooperstown. And if the people on Twitter and the Twins can tell me, we have flipped the switch, and this is now going to keep up almost all the time, then I'm in. But until then, but nobody is suggesting, nobody has ever said, and this is where I think people get really, really confused, because I don't know if they don't read or can't read, but where people get confused is the whole, like, Ortiz thing, right? The insinuation there is, I'm so mad at Miguel Sano, I'd release him. No one ever said that.
Correct.
I got a tweet last night from a guy that I put out a year ago or more that basically said, when Sano was struggling, if I could get an ace pitcher, I'd take it. And he sent me a note back saying, thought about this again. I said, it's a great tweet. Like, I said, I have, and thank you, and yes, I would do this again. And guess what? Nobody else responded because they all knew I was right. Like, it's not that big a stretch. If I could take Miguel Sano to market right now and get a true ace, are you kidding me?
All right, let me ask you this. Would you trade? So Miguel Sano has two years left on his contract after this year, okay?
Yes.
Would you trade Miguel Sano for a month and a half of Trevor Bauer? I would. And I would keep all those prospects. I would keep Brent Rooker. I would keep Trevor Larnach. And I would keep...
Wow.
Would you trade him... All right, I'll flip it a little bit. Would you center him as a piece...
Mind blown. Sorry.
To the Indians, who are also looking for more offense. That means he has to hurt you.
Reckless speculation.
In your own division.
No, I can't do that.
Wait a minute. So you would give up Miguel Sano for a possible just rental of Trevor Bauer instead of someone like Clevinger, who's under team control for 2 years, or police at
control
for 4 years.
Clevinger's the one. So Clevinger's 29 years old.
Oh, so the trade. I'm sorry. So the trade is definitely Clevinger. Okay,
Clevinger,
I didn't understand.
Clevinger. So let's go down this path.
I love this.
So Mike Clevinger.
God, this is reckless.
Miguel Sano and Mike Clevinger can both be free agents, I believe, in 2023. So you're going to get him for like a month in playoff this year,
okay,
and then you're going to get him in 21 and 22. Miguel Sano makes an average of like 9 or 10. I don't have his contract in front of me, but I think it's like an average of $10 million per year the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Which actually, for a guy that's
a good deal.
It is. It's fine.
He's got a good contract.
It's not $20 million, and he's going to go, and if he stays healthy, which, again, he hasn't done yet in his career, if he stays healthy for a full season, he could hit 40 home runs.
Right.
He's only hit 30 once, but he's got the power to hit 40 if he can stay healthy, Adam Dunn style. Mike Clevinger has not signed a contract. He's arbitration next year, so probably like $7 or $8 million, and then probably like $10 or $12 million. So pretty comparable. Would you trade Miguel Sano for Mike Clevinger? I would in a heartbeat. 100%.
In that context, if it's Clevinger that I'm getting, if I'm getting one of their top pitchers, an ace, as much as it would pain me to see him hit his inevitable 8 home runs against me per year, yeah, I think you have to do it.
Reckless speculation.
And Cleveland's going to come back. They're going to need more, I think. Whether it's a lower grade prospect to sweeten the deal,
saying Cleveland has to offer more, or the Twins would. Okay,
I don't think Cleveland's. I like Clevinger a lot, but I don't think they're going to take Clevinger for Sano straight up.
That's the trick.
They'd have to throw in something like a 10th prospect in return to make it a good legitimate deal. They're not going to just do Clevinger for Sano. I want to.
What do you mean?
That.
Why wouldn't they do Clevinger for Sano? I thought that Miguel Sano was the most valuable guy on the team.
Pick up the phone, ask Twitter. Okay, Twitter would do this trade.
I mean, too negative. I just want to make it clear. Sano has been an incredible asset to this team the last week. Okay,
I would rather do Sano for Clevinger than Sano for Bauer.
Oh, for sure.
Because I could control Clevinger.
Oh, yes,
100%. And he might be an a-hole,
but what if it was this pitch. What if the Reds, and by the way, here's your
reckless speculation.
Here's your reckless speculation. Twins trade deadline in 6 days. All right. Your reckless Twins trade speculation. We brought this up briefly yesterday. I told you guys the thing to root for if you're a Twins fan is for the Reds to fall flat on their faces over the next 7 days or so. And the Reds play 8 games against the Cubs and the Brewers. They were 2 games out of playoff position going into yesterday's games. They lost to the Brewers last night to drop to 11-16. 11-16. If they keep losing, like, they should be sellers now. If they keep losing, will they put Trevor Bauer on the trade block or Sonny Gray, who's Declan's guy?
As of yesterday, the Reds were buyers.
Which is ridiculous.
So they're almost going to have to lose every game this week. Now they're off to a good start.
They're 11-16.
I'm telling you right now that teams like the Reds and Marlins right now see themselves as buyers. The smartest team?
Reckless speculation.
The smartest team going right now? The Baltimore Orioles. Because I guess their GM or president of baseball ops went on Sirius and essentially said, yeah, it's great, right? It's not real. Don't worry about it. We are going to be selling.
Yeah, the Orioles are 500. They're 500.
I know, but they are Zolgadian in their realization that it's nothing more than a mirage at this point in time. But the Reds aren't. So the Reds are a problem.
So what if the Reds said, "All right, this sucks. We've lost like 6 games in a row. We thought we had a chance for that 8 seed. We were just too ambitious, thinking we could be one of the 8 playoff teams in the National League."
All right, what's your Bauer trade?
We're going to keep a Trevor Bauer trade window open for 10 minutes. You have 10 minutes to answer this.
Okay.
We're only talking to you, Minnesota Twins. And once 10 minutes are over, like, you don't get access to Trevor Bauer.
Okay.
You get Trevor Bauer for the rest of the season, then he becomes a free agent. But you have to give us Miguel Sano. 2 years of Miguel Sano.
I'd do it. I'd do it all day. 100%. 100%.
Oh, I know.
In fact, and on the list of guys like Bauer, if I was ranking.
The Reds win that trade, by the way.
Yes, they
will. The Reds win that trade.
Yeah, they do.
And you can't do it because the season's not real.
Real quick, sorry. So Trevor Bauer this season. Trevor Bauer has a 1.65 earned run average in 5 starts. 2 of those are complete game shutouts. Think about the Twins can't get a starter past the 5th inning.
Yeah, no, he's got
Trevor
2
Bauer has 2
shutouts.
Complete game shutouts. He's averaging 13.5 strikeouts per 9 innings.
Yep.
He is absurd, and he is the best pitcher in baseball right now.
So I think he had 4 starts going into last night's game against the Brewers, which the Reds lost, as you said, and I think his ERA was something like 0.65 going into that one with 2 complete game shutouts, too.
Your rotation going into
the
postseason.
I can do the Clevinger trade because I've got term. See, that's my thing.
There's no option. I'm not giving you a Clevinger.
I know you're not. I can't do it. I said I can't do that. I can't make a trade.
Reckless speculation.
I can't make a trade to run to make a run at a World Series that's more fun and games than real business. Sorry.
Dex, you're in?
I'm listening.
No, hold on. I'm out.
My point is...
Answer the question.
Yes, I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in.
Yes.
God, all right. I'm in.
But if, boy, this is tough.
But if I'm ranking the guys who I want between Bauer, Gray, and Clevinger, Bauer's third on that list.
And what's Gray's contract?
He's got a team-friendly deal, too.
Is he under contract for multiple years?
Yes. He has a team option, too, built into 2023, so if he completely S's the bed in 2 years, you can get out.
I don't want to get out if I just made a big trade
for equation,
him.
This equation does not include Clevinger or Sonny Gray. It is you have one opportunity.
Sonny Gray makes $10.1 million this season and for the next two seasons, and then a $12 million team option in 23.
If it's just Trevor Bauer for 2.5 years of Miguel Sano.
You're doing it.
I'm in.
We're going to win, Twins.
How many home runs?
That's such a dumb trade. Like, it's,
would Sano hit in that ballpark?
All of them.
Great American Ballpark is a bandbox.
It would solidify his status as the modern-day right-handed Adam Dunn.
Who I believe played quite a while with the Reds, right?
Yeah, he was a Reds superstar. In fact, I believe the Great American Ballpark is the stadium that Adam Dunn christened.
Really?
I think they opened that stadium. There you go.
Then Miguel would fit right in. It would fit your narrative perfectly.
So I think, just to put a wrap on this, listen, like, he is, as we have talked about, he is a prolific power hitter when he is on and when he is healthy. He also only once in his career has been on or healthy enough to hit 30 home runs. So the question has never been, when he's on, can he hit home runs and do damage offensively? Absolutely he can. That's not the criticism. The criticism is everything outside of what he's done in the last week. So it just drives me nuts. We can't have these nuanced conversations about a guy like Miguel Sano. And it was the same conversation with Joe Mauer, too, just like apples to oranges. Well, he doesn't hit for power. It's like, okay, but he adds this, 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 this. And Miguel Sano is like the inverse of Joe Mauer. Well, he hits for all this power. You're an idiot. It's like, right, but he also is one of the two or three most prolific strikeout batters in baseball history, which does matter. It does matter because you're reducing your chances to get on base, to hit for average, to drive other runs in. He's relegated. He's gone from shortstop to third. Now he's playing first base, and he can't stay healthy. Like, those are all valid criticisms. So, I don't know. Like, why can't we be nuanced? That's just my...
There's a passion about this guy that takes it to a level of conversation that I don't get. But I just don't get why we also... Where do the people go when he can't hit?
They wait for him to hit.
Like,
chirp.
You can't... That's not real life, man. You got to have it both ways.
Yeah.
You got to be, when he's not playing well, be hard on him. And when he's playing well, have fun with it. Goes both ways. It's like your kids. If your kids screw up, you discipline them, right? It's not like, hey, Johnny, that's okay. You crashed the car. Let's talk again when you pass a class.
And I would say, too, that like sometimes it's so easy to ride the wave of a player. What I'm telling you is, like, I've watched 6 years of this guy. I know that his wave right now is going up. I totally get that. I'm telling you that his last week does not, like, overturn 6 years of who he is as a player.
And I will say this. So terrible start followed by great streak, and this applies to him and a few guys, too. I want to see this in the playoffs. Like, that's where you turn the corner.
He's 1-for-12 in the playoffs.
But if you're going to – but I'm saying the competition and the teams are probably going to, or most certainly will improve, but the next time – that I want to have this, oh my God, this is real for sure, is the playoffs, not AL Central bleeping games. I think it's very fair at this point in his life to ask him, you get to October, let's see this.
Yes.
I think that's a fair ask.
I agree with that. Yeah. All right. What else from last night's
football
Twins game?
Can I tell you guys about a misconstrued tweet of mine, and it's a talker from last night's game, and I absolutely love this.
I love that we're doing this podcast just for the people on Twitter.
But I made an observation. This isn't an unfair observation by me, and it's not an unfair response because I didn't pass judgment, good or bad. I just tweeted last night after, I believe, so Sergio Romo gave up a double to Tyler Naquin to start the eighth, and he backed up third base. And then they showed him turning around, and somebody in the Cleveland dugout, I think it said something to him, and so he responded back, and they were jawing back and forth. And then as he got the next three outs, we saw some type of exchange, and he was PO'd, and he was yelling, I think, at Naquin and the dugout. Anyway, long story short, given what transpired against the Royals and then Cleveland, I tweeted something along the lines of, he's either going to get a teammate hit or start a brawl. And it was just an observation. People responded with like, yeah, well, that's good. That's a great thing. To be clear, I think that Sergio Romo's passion, and he's a funny guy, and I think he's a smart guy. I think his passion, though, for a Twins team that strikes me as laid back, Rocco is, right? Nelly Cruz, which is also fine. I think the passion that Romo brings to his job is awesome. I'm just saying that he's probably going to get the Twins in a brawl. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I sort of like it. But it's just interesting that first the Royals and now Cleveland he's gotten in spats with. But I applaud it. Keep it interesting, Sergio.
This is the stare down.
Got him. Romo left at second base, and he looks over his shoulder.
Yeah, look at their dugout, see? Told you.
So, all right, I think he's also probably going to start a brawl. I'm kind of okay. I'm not okay with the brawl, but I'm okay with him staring into dugouts.
Yeah.
Think about when you watch an NBA basketball game, for instance, and like Chris Paul does this all the time. You ever watch Chris Paul, even against the Timberwolves, like a crappy Timberwolves team?
Yes, I have.
Chris Paul will like stare down the Wolves bench. It's hilarious.
Yep.
So NBA players all the time will hit dagger shots and like, you know, they'll pull the jersey over to expose their heart, like their chest, mm-hmm. and they'll stare down opposing benches. Remember when Allen Iverson 20 years ago in the NBA Finals hits a three-pointer in the corner over Tyronn Lue, steps over him and looks at the Lakers bench as he's walking down the baseline or down the sideline. It happens all the time in football, too, where a guy will make a big play, turn to the other bench, pound his chest, like, come on, like, keep throwing at me. Xavier Rhodes used to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And the reaction in the NBA and the NFL is, oh, yeah, it's part of the game. This is great. We're chirping back and forth. Now I'm going to get you, and I'm going to chirp back at your bench, and it's just all part of, like, the fun and games of the NFL and the NBA, and no one really takes it super personally. Like, it's just part of the competition.
Sure.
Major League Baseball, if you so much as, like, look at a home run too long, or God forbid do what Sergio Romo's doing, which is like thump his chest while looking in the opposing dugout. The response isn't, oh, it's great. Yes. Guys are getting fired up. Let's see what happens the next inning. It's, you better watch your back.
Yeah.
You're going to put your hitter
You're
in
right.
a bat, but your hitter's going to take a fastball to the ribs. Like,
right.
No. Let's just leave it at,
he's going to die.
This is great. This is fun.
I'm going to kill him.
He's emotional. These are two top-notch teams that have a chance to win the World Series and that have been in a rivalry for the better part of like 20 years. And he's looking into the dugout because he hears some chirping and he got the best of them. Like, that's it. It doesn't need to be anything more than that. Oh, it's disrespectful. No, it's fun. It's great. It makes baseball more fun.
His passion, though, I think is good, right? Because
great for this team.
This is a laid-back team. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I like the fact that they got a guy who will come in. And I mean, he doesn't shut up. But, okay, that's fine. It's sports. It's supposed to be fun. It's all supposed to be fun. Reckless speculation is fun.
Did you see when he went back to the dugout? And I didn't see who he was talking to. Like, the Indians had come back out.
Yes.
Or, like, I think it was the Indians'
He's
first base coach or something.
Yes.
Or, no, it would have been the Indians in the field. So the first base, I don't know, first baseman, whatever.
He's still talking at
He's
at
chirping.
Them.
And Miguel Sano and somebody else. So he's kind of, like, sitting at the steps of the dugout. And Miguel Sano and somebody else are just, like, tapping him on the shoulder. Like, dude, just, all right, we're good.
Yeah, they're, like massaging him. They were like, calm down,
like,
calm down.
They're, like, trying to move him out away.
Yeah.
They finally got him to go back in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
But he brings a great personality to this team, for sure.
Dick said that during the commercial break, Rocco came over and tried to calm him down first, too.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about him that I sort of like. Like, they're all like, oh, dude, no, let's be quiet, let's be classy. He's like, no, I'm going to talk. And he tweeted today that basically he said in his tweet something along the lines of, I wish the cameras and mics could pick up more so that you could basically hear who starts it.
Yeah.
But I see, as a sports fan, I like this stuff.
So he's insinuating that the Royals and the Indians have both been chirping him while he's pitching.
So it's all perception, but he's not wrong, okay? Casey, and I like this too. When Casey was here, because they're sort of young, and they're not a bad team now, but they're not that great. Their dugout didn't shut up. Like, they're chirping the whole game. And part of it's just, like, clapping and, you know, trying to have fun. It's not like a anti-Twins thing. But they didn't shut up. And so I think Sergio's thing was he struck out Soler to end that game. And then I think he's like, shut up, sit down, shut up. Okay, so it's just going back and forth. But, Phil, to your point, this is the whole baseball thing. Part of the fun of not having fans is hearing dugouts. And some talk a lot. But is there something wrong with that? Like, is there something why aren't we acting like we're in church?
Yeah,
so I'm not criticizing anybody for chirping and having fun because it makes the game, to me, more interesting.
Dude, like, how many times in the NBA you watch, you know, these games are being played in the bubble right now, these first round playoff matchups. How often do you see a guy like block a shot out of bounds, bump his chest and say, and just like literally stare at the other guy and say, mm-hmm. like, don't bring that bleep into my house. And then they'll chirp back and then they, okay. And then it's over.
Right.
It's part of the fabric of the game. And I just don't think, I think the baseball old school gatekeepers and the unwritten rules guys have tried to suppress showing emotion. And so now I love that guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. come in, hit a grand slam, walk it out of the box when you're up by seven runs.
Then steal a base the next
day. Get criticized and then steal third base the next day just to say, screw you. I'm here. Yeah.
Yes.
So I got one other thing for you off last night's game. I wouldn't sound the alarm by any means.
Oh, no. No, please do it.
The Twins have played multiple close games, and they've done a really good job keeping this guy. He's only pitched back-to-back once. And it was August 10th and 11th. So they've done a good job of just trying to make sure that he's not pitching in back-to-backs. Just keep his arm fresh throughout the season. But he last pitched on August 22nd in a win against Kansas City.
Yep.
And then did not pitch on the 23rd. So he had a day off. So last Sunday. Night would have been coming off of a day rest.
And I thought he was going to close.
In a close game against a really good team.
Yes,
with
sir.
With four relief innings up for grabs. And Tyler Duffy did not pitch.
Yes. Please sound it.
Just want to know, where's Tyler Duffy?
So I astutely thought that took to Twitter.
Humbly, astutely thought.
I astutely thought.
Over a reliever.
He's going to close because
Rodgers
had closed
on
Sunday. And I'm like, Rocco, the thing that I love about Rocco is this. As best I can figure, Rocco is like being in a marriage. After about a year plus, you know exactly what he's going to do. Like, there's no, he's going to go to bed at the same time. He's going to watch the same damn shows. Like,
I'll be honest, I didn't know he was going to bring Adrianza's 430 OPS in as a straight pinch hitter.
He does surprise
for Alex Avila. Why not just let Ryan Jeffers hit in that spot?
That was going to be my point.
That was weird.
He's starting to surprise me, and I'm shocked. Like, I thought Duffy would close because Rodgers had pitched on Sunday. Some of his pinch hitting decisions are sort of weird at times.
And why burn Adrianza? Like, why not just go right to Jeffers as a pinch hitter and then keep Adrianza alive as a potential defensive replacement later? That was super weird.
I have no clue. But anyway, I like to think when it comes to Rocco that I know exactly what I'm going to get. And I'm finding sometimes I don't, which surprises me.
Well, Taylor Rodgers back-to-back. I think we looked up, I think these were career.
They were not good.
His back-to-back ERA is like 7.5 or something.
Yes.
He's just not good in back-to-backs. He hasn't been good, period, this season.
And Tyler Duffy could have most definitely closed that game out.
He was facing
the
best part of the Indians lineup.
Wrong.
So Taylor Rodgers, great job getting your seventh save of the season last night. I was just wondering why Tyler Duffy, four innings of relief there. He's your best reliever. It's a close game against the Indians.
You should demand answers. Don't wonder. Go ask what the hell's going on. Why didn't Tyler Duffy pitch?
My career asking postgame questions ended in 2013. I put in my 4 years asking baseball postgame questions. So I will not be hopping on.
I did not
soon.
Jump on the Zoom call last night. Can I throw in one more? I'd like to start a low level campaign here. Like, I just want to keep it in this room for right now. But we are 30 games in, and I think there might not be precedent for this. If there is, it's very rare. Can I mention Nelson Cruz and MVP in the same sentence?
Yes, you can.
And I know he's a
100%
DH.
You can.
And I know it's odd, but my God. This man is on the precipice of chasing a triple crown.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go full Fox Sports North here. This guy is potentially going to chase a Triple Crown. He is 40.
I feel like it's a little hypocritical for you to bring up Nelson Cruz and Triple Crown while also, like, on the other side of your mouth saying the season doesn't matter and you wouldn't celebrate a World Series because it's 60 games.
No,
I'm just going to throw that out there.
No, you are not wrong. What I'm saying is, and I think in 162, I don't think I would argue for a DH to get this award. But given the parameters of what we are dealing with, I think that there is at least a case, the start of a case. How about that? For in a 60-game season, which is incredibly short, for an odd position, DH, to win an MVP, when you think about if you took this guy's bat out of the lineup, and it's one that is not the Bomber Squad of 2019, this is not that team. They're not that team at all in some ways. Not that they're bad, but they certainly aren't as productive and or scary as they were consistently a year ago. I think that there is a. I think we can start the case to at least talk about Nelson Cruz as being the 2020 short season American League MVP.
I agree with that. I also agree with this. And I think I brought this up a couple weeks ago. It's even more official now that he is the greatest hitter in Twins history. Not saying over a 10-year stretch, just saying since he's been a Twin, a year.
It's interesting. Yeah,
he's the greatest hitter in Twins history over the stretch that he has been a Twin. And you can't really even...
Harmon?
Like, the only debate would be, like, if you brought longevity into play. And that's fine. Like, obviously, Harmon Killebrew is one of the greatest power hitters of all time and spent, was it 12 years or something, in a Twins uniform. Kirby Puckett spent 14 years in a Twins uniform. He's a great hitter. Neither one of those guys ever did anything like this over a 150-game stretch, whatever it's been for him. It's ridiculous. Like, this dude is...
I'm not going to rip it.
And he's not just feasting on bad ball pitchers and, like, number five starters. He's taken... Like, Trevor Rosenthal is back to being Trevor Rosenthal. He's taken Trevor Rosenthal deep 450 feet. You know, he's making good pitchers sweat. Mm-hmm. Sometimes... I know I said I was done talking about Sano on the show here, but sometimes Miguel Sano will just, like, feast on the Royals and number five starters, and then when a real pitcher comes in, like you face in the playoffs, he just has no chance. That's not Nelson Cruz. Nelson Cruz will make legit pitchers shake.
The home run last night was a work of art.
Oppo.
Well, and they're purposely, smartly pitching him away, right? And
he can hit that.
And he's not like, oh, what am I going to do? I am Mr. Pitcher. I'm in trouble. He's like, bleep this.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And he damn near hit two Oppo last night.
So
football.
Let's break into Twins game down like it's a football game.
Reckless speculation from the opponent side. I'm not going to be surprised if the Twins don't make a move by 3 o'clock Monday. Cleveland has to. They've got to go get
reckless speculation.
Their offense is far too feeble. I think I saw a stat going into last night's game. I believe their collective outfield is hitting like 193.
Well, who are some of these guys? Like, who's this? Who's this? This
Mike
guy,
Freeman?
Mike Freeman. Who the hell is Mike
County
Freeman?
County attorney turned baseball player?
Yeah, not the same guy.
Jordan Luplo?
It's not that hard to find left fielders, is it? Just go. There's like literally 15 left fielders on the market every offseason.
But that's the point. Is my guess is they have to make a trade there.
It's crazy.
Something like that, right?
And then they've got, who's this other guy? Well, Tyler Naquin, who's...
He's been around.
Kind of a fourth outfielder type. Greg Allen.
Yeah.
Greg Allen.
Their center fielder.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to make a trade. Like, they have to.
Yeah, Greg Allen.
They don't pose...
God.
They don't pose an offensive threat right now, basically. Like, they've got three guys, right?
Yeah, they have...
Carlos Santana.
And those three guys are really, really good.
Lindor... But.
So Greg Allen has been a major leaguer for like 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on base percentage below 300. It's really bad. It's really bad. That's why maybe you pick up the phone. Twins have a surplus of offense. Cleveland's got two pitchers that they
can Sano play
off the roster.
Can Sano play left? I mean, he's tried to play right before. Why not try him?
Who is the... Okay, dumb question here. So they got Carlos Carrasco, who's, you know, first base, DH type.
Santana.
What did I say? Oh, Carrasco, sorry.
The pitcher.
Great.
I would actually trade for him, too.
Yeah.
He's great. Who is their regular DH?
Franmil,
but Franmil can play some outfield, kind of.
It's a butcher contest between him and Miguel, probably.
I'm just trying to find a spot for Miguel. Like, if you move Franmil to right field or something and put Miguel in first base, Carlos Santana
I think
DH.
You could move Franmil to left, and he'd probably drop balls, but, you know, you'd score 18
reckless speculation.
Sorry, Dex, what?
I mean, Santana's, I think, just a free agent after this year. So he's 34, even though he's still great. I love Carlos Santana. He's honestly one of my favorite players in baseball.
Me too, because he hits 200, but gets on base at like a 500
clip. He'll walk 100 times and hit 20 home runs. He's great.
Owns Glenn Perkins, too. That was always a theme.
Oh, it was. That's right.
Wasn't it Carlos Santana that just owned Glenn Perkins?
That's amazing.
I don't remember.
Jed doesn't remember.
If I were... All right, it's more reckless no trade speculation for you. And tell me if this is too much.
Sure.
Okay.
Reckless speculation.
Because I don't think Cleveland's just going to do straight up Miguel Sano for Mike Clevenger. I'm bringing this back around. Would you do Johan Duran and Miguel Sano for Mike Clevenger? Johan Duran is your second best pitching prospect. He's number five in your organization.
No,
Cleveland's going to come back and say, I need some type of pitching prospect
that's too much.
To replace
that. But that's your best pitching prospect. No, I don't do that. I can't do that. I would give them a pitching prospect, but I'm not going to give them. Listen, we feel a certain way about Miguel Sano. The league and fans feel a different way.
Right.
I'm going off of what the league and fans feel about Miguel Sano.
I picked up the phone. I'm offering Duran and Sano for Clevenger right
now. Oh, I have right you. Now. You know what? You know what?
You
how long am I told to stay
speculation?
Away from not drinking? Demon alcohol.
You know this ain't gonna happen.
How about reckless trade speculation?
For the love of God!
We are always stuck in the same rut.
You just traded away your second pitching prospect.
You have to hoard. You can't trade this prospect. Oh, but we can't do it.
They traded Gratterall.
Oh, but we have to get this good ace. Oh, but we can't give up this fifth prospect. Make up your mind and pull the trigger on a GD trade.
I'm disowning you as my sports son.
This is the trade you make.
We're done. We're done.
This is the trade you make.
Get out of my house by 6 o'clock tonight.
I'm not going to disown Dex. I like where Dex is going here. In general, I agree with his.
But Sano and Duran?
I'm just saying. Dex's philosophy of being aggressive to target
sure.
a franchise-changing pitcher
which is
the right thing to do. And my worry with Clevenger would be he's a veteran pitcher, and he made a mistake during COVID. And to me, it was very obvious that there had been other things.
There was a mistake. He basically flipped his teammates the bird.
Well, but what I'm saying is I don't think if that's like the only thing that you've done wrong to ruffle feathers,
yeah, no, it's
good. I don't think you get booted from the clubhouse. I think there's some clubhouse cancer there that had built up. To boot him from the club. I don't think, oh man, you did this thing and you're just off the team now.
He'll be back. He'll be back there.
This is great stuff.
Reckless speculation.
I would trade a prospect, but I would probably want to trade Cleveland a prospect with Sano in that deal who's not on the 60-man that is either here or St. Paul.
So can't you do player to be named later and just give him
you know,
else?
I got to find that out. I got to find that out if you can do a player to be named and have that player not be playing right now and then name the player in December. In fact, you know what?
I'm going to guess you probably can't, that they probably put a loophole on that. But
I'm going to send a text and find out if I can.
You could also just like...
It's a good question.
You know, semantically, you could just float them... If you can't do it now, you could just say, all right, we'll just like do a different trade in 2 months and just like we'll float you a prospect or something. But then you're relying on someone's word.
Right.
I don't trust any of these
guys. I don't
like
that.
Yeah, so. I'm not trading Duran, though. Sorry. I think Duran's going to be good.
Mm. Hey, quick shout out real quick to PodMN, the new app that allows you to discover local Minnesota podcasts. There's all kinds of Minnesota sports podcasts in addition to the Score North podcast that you can discover through PodMN. It's free to download in the Apple Store and in the Google Play Store. And you can check it out by just searching PodMN. Not only can you discover local podcasts, but you get rewarded for the longer you listen to those local podcasts. So put that on your smartphone and check out the brand new PodMN app.
You like that? You like that?
All right, most important Vikings thing here on the show, Mackie and Judd, and if you want deeper Vikings discussions, and we're going to get into deep Vikings discussions here, but there's just been so much juicy twin stuff. But Vikings training camp is underway, and we have a daily Viking show on Apple, Spotify, and ScoreNorth.com. Or if you want the video version of it, you can find us on YouTube.com/ScoreNorth, talking Vikings on Purple Daily. So, Judd, the most important Vikings thing today, they sent out a release, and this is not really surprising, but it's official now. They will not have fans of any kind, in any number, inside U.S. Bank Stadium for the first two home games, including that opener against the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, so it's September 13th. They play their first game of the season against the Packers at home, so no fans there. September 27th, I believe, then they play host to the Tennessee Titans, and no fans at that game. Now, the Titans game, I got to be honest. It's not that the Titans are terrible. It's that it's an AFC opponent. And does not having your home fans in a potentially loud stadium hurt you a bit in that case? Absolutely. But the Packer game, to me, a big deal. because the Vikings then go back and play Green Bay in Green Bay later in the season. I think there's some question by that point if the Packers will have at least some fans in their stadium by that point. And this means that the earliest the Vikings could have fans in attendance at a game would be their third home game of the season, which is October 18th against the Falcons, because after that Titans game, they go play back-to-back games on the road. But I really think that not having fans at that Packer game is a big deal, because I will go back to saying that the Vikings' biggest advantage, I think, it's not even close, at home, is their fans. I mean, they play on turf, which is fine, but it's not like they can use the cold, or it's not like there's some weird thing about the stadium. It's the noise. And so if the Vikings are going to play the Packers with basically just a baseline white noise, to me, advantage Packers big time.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's a bigger problem for the Vikings in the home games against inexperienced quarterbacks, in which there's really only two and they're not till December. If they play empty stadium games against Gardner Minshew and whoever's if it's Mitch Trubisky quarterbacking the Bears, and he's not even really young anymore, but he's just sort of easily flustered.
He can't win that job.
Easily flustered quarterbacks.
He can't win that job.
He won't have it by December 20th unless Nick Foles is hurt.
You don't trade for Nick Foles.
But I just don't know how much the noise has impacted Aaron Rodgers. I think obviously, like, the biggest thing would be just snap counts. If you can go up to the line of scrimmage because it's quiet, and you can dictate snap counts and maybe draw the opposing defense offside, that's a huge advantage on the road that just doesn't really happen. Maybe inside that Chargers soccer stadium it happens, where you can actually, like, give a snap count on the road. But yeah, it's definitely, man, when you look at the schedule, not only are the Vikings, as we talked to Mike Sando about last week on Purple Daily, not only are they facing the toughest slate of opposing quarterbacks, they face, like, Hall of Fame quarterbacks in, I want to say, like, one out of every four or three games. When you look at Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and, I mean, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Drew Brees and even Matt Ryan, who's probably not a Hall of Famer but might be. Deshaun Watson, who knows, like, where that guy's career is headed. So without any of the crowd noise stuff, they face a ridiculous schedule of quarterbacks. And then you add on top of it, they don't get the home field advantage of crazy off the, you know, U.S.
Bank
Stadium.
And their defense gets a big boost
sound
from that. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So it's just kind of, I almost feel like, you know, Vikings fans, you just kind of brace yourself. This is not, nothing is shaping up to, like,
wait, hold on
fall
a second.
In your
favor. Sound the alarm. Sound the alarm. If you're warning them, you better sound that alarm.
Yeah. Just saying. I think we all have to go in
six
with very...
6-10.
I wouldn't say 6-10, but I would say like 7-9, 8-8. It kind of feels like you just have to brace yourself for this not to be the best year, and don't overreact and, like, want to fire Mike Zimmer right away.
He got through a contract. He's fine now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll see. But doesn't feel like, is there any path to, like, oh, they're going to be 12-4 at this point with no crowd inside the stadium, all these tough quarterback games? Like, they've got a three-game home stretch later in the year against Dallas,
Carolina,
Jacksonville.
This feels like such a weird year, Phil. This feels like such a weird year. I don't know what I think about this league as a whole right now. Like, I still believe, and I know that the early testing during training camp has been very positive of players, but I still believe that we're going to have outbreaks. I think it's naive to think that we're not going to. And it might not be the Vikings, but, you know, there's going to be some teams, right, on a Sunday that suddenly just can't play, or quarterbacks. So I will state my case for football that I've stated for baseball, basketball, and hockey, and that's this. I'm glad they're playing. It gives us a lot to talk about. It's good for us. I welcome sports. Do I think that you can make a coherent analysis of what things mean in 2020 in sports? Absolutely not. But that doesn't mean I don't want them. To be very clear, just because I can't do it does not mean I'm going to sit down and watch games and it's going to be great. Do I expect them to be really well played and normal? No, I don't.
Okay, do you guys want Fox to put fake fans in the stadium?
No.
It's terrifying. It's literally terrifying on the MLB broadcast. I love what hockey did with just, like, putting these banners down of either the NHL logos or corporate sponsors. Do that, dude. I'm cool with crowd noise. Totally cool with crowd noise. Yeah. I actually kind of like it. Do not put the fake fans in there.
It is super creepy. It's a horror movie watching some of these baseball games on Fox.
But explain
the national games.
Explain this. Why don't you abort mission when you realize that you can't have the fans show up in every angle? Because you can't. Like, if they're shooting, I believe if they do the traditional shot from center field through the pitcher, There's no fans behind home plate.
Just the cutouts.
But then if the ball gets hit, you get the fans.
Are we going to do cutouts inside U.S. Bank Stadium? Cutouts, maybe probably. Cutouts behind probably. You know, the goalposts?
Yeah.
It'd be kind of fun.
I guess so.
Phil, have you seen the Thunderdome thing that they're doing for WWE?
Yes.
So Judd, they...
I love it.
So they took like the wrestling ring. So they were performing in like just a little performance center. And they were allowing some fans in with like barricade glass. Like it was kind of creepy. It looked like prison.
And I don't think it was fans. I think it was just like performance center wrestlers.
Yeah.
That so are like unknown wrestlers.
In the bubble and probably not real fans. So now what they did is they made this thing called the Thunderdome, and it's basically LED screens of virtual fans around the ring.
Yes. And so they rented out an arena somewhere, somewhere in Florida, I think. They rented out an arena and they set up, like Dex said, like these big screens all around, imagine the basketball court, or in this case, the ring.
Yep, like in soccer.
And so when you're watching a wrestling match inside the Thunderdome, like SummerSlam was on Sunday night and Raw was last night, it's just like all of the faces of people in the crowd, but they're on screens.
Like giant iPad, like giant
And you
monitors.
Do like this.
I like it for wrestling. I think it might be a little bit, it's probably really hard to put together for football because you have literally 3 weeks to put it together. Yeah. So, but you have to put together an all
No fake stadium. Fans. It's bizarre looking. It's not attractive. It doesn't help me. Like, I don't enjoy it.
So if they were attractive fans, you would be inclined to it?
If the technology was up to date to make it look super real consistently, I wouldn't care.
I got
to
think that, that there's better technology than whatever Fox is using down the left field line in these national games.
It looks like Fox bought some type of machine from 1986 or something, and like, this is good enough.
Actually, it looks like 90s video game audience.
Sure, yes. It just doesn't, it looks old.
It's like you're playing like, you know, one of the first iterations of Madden.
Yeah, it looks like AAA Baseball 2001. It's like, that's what it looks like.
It's a good one.
So, that's your most important Vikings thing of the day here, and daily Vikings conversations, in-depth, and camp updates over at Purple Daily, the podcast, and youtube.com/Score North, I should say. And also, we have our own Mackie and Judd YouTube channel that I believe is up close to 400 subscribers. The Score North YouTube channel is up almost to 9,000 subscribers. Ooh. So thank you, everybody, for jumping on these YouTube channels. YouTube.com/MackieJudd for Write That Down, for Action Movie Rewind, some of our Wolves speculation from the last week or two about Devin Booker and Ben Simmons. But I think it's time we jump into some old tweets exposed.
I'm so excited for this because it sounds like it's going to be brutal.
You know, somebody, just since we're doing our show pretty much centered around people chirping at us on Twitter, somebody chirped me this morning about my Miguel Sano take and said, you know, it's okay to admit when you're wrong sometimes. I said, buddy, Tuesdays, old tweets exposed, Fridays, accountability session. I think we admit that we're wrong more often than any show in the country at this point. So
we really do.
We can't escape our bad takes here on Mackie and Judd. So Declan goes into the archives. Judd and I have been tweeting since 2009. There's a lot of potentially bad tweets out there, and Declan brings them to the forefront every single week.
Okay, so both you and Judd's tweets correspond with one another. They're close in dates, and they're on the same topic. So we're going to start with Phil, and then we'll go to Judd's.
Okay.
So this is Phil's tweet. I'll try to zoom in a little bit here.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I saw this last week. You found this from last weekend.
Wow. Yeah. You know what?
Phil and I were doing shows at the...
I might still do this.
Now, this exactly. This is not necessarily a bad tweet, but looking back on it, you asked, Twins acquire Chris Archer, Rays acquire Miguel Sano.
I know what mine is.
Who says no? Well, for starters, the Rays said no, who then put him to Pittsburgh, I believe. And Chris Archer's kind of been a disaster in Pittsburgh.
He has.
A lot of good stuff. He has that Jose Barrios Liriano disease where his stuff is amazing, but he can't figure out how to throw strikes and throw it around the plate. But Phil says, Twins acquire Chris Archer, Rays acquire Miguel Sano. And there are some replies. Should we see some of these replies down here?
Please do.
All right, let's do it.
We started this whole conversation.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
What does Archer's contract look like now? There will be a free agent after 2021. Archer's nerves make me
Corey.
More. Makes me more than $8.5 million a year. Archer is a stud.
Corey loved
that. He was a stud. What year did we bring this up? 2017?
And he was really good.
Yeah.
And they were going to trade him when we knew it.
Okay, so Chris Archer, by the way, just underwent surgery a month or two ago for thoracic outlet syndrome, which is what basically ended Phil Hughes' career.
Yep.
Oh, that's the rib right there. Remove part of your rib.
Yeah, it's like some sort of rib. Like
Roger
upper.
Minneapolis.
If I'm Falvey, I do that deal today. Sano's health will be constant concern/problem due to his inability to push himself away from the dinner table.
Tom, he's gotten in better shape since 2017.
Our buddy Tom Roller, who's been on Write That Down, says no.
No.
Oh,
Adam
me.
Says no. Hell no.
Hell no.
Yep.
My baseball card.
So here's the thing. So he did get traded by the Rays in 2017 or 18. He got traded to the Pirates.
Terrible trade by the Pirates.
I mean, the Pirates were like, it was super weird that they would trade away young, good players for an established pitcher when they weren't ready to win. Now, Pittsburgh at one point, 5 or 6 years ago, was sort of a forward-thinking progressive front office. I think they've kind of eroded. I would have been curious to see in 2017, at the time of this reckless speculation, if the Twins front office would have gotten their hands on that version of Chris Archer, how would it have played out?
Mm-hmm.
Because last year he kind of struggled and he was injured, and now he's under, it's like injury kind of derailed this thought now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the risk you run too with pitchers, and that you might be trading for a guy that needs thoracic outlet surgery or something, or Tommy John surgery. So this was a bad tweet. In retrospect, Chris Archer has been bad. But the premise of it, trading Sano for an ace pitcher.
We drove that conversation into the ground, but it was a great reckless speculation conversation.
Speaking of driving that conversation into the ground.
I think I know what it's going to be.
Mr. Judd Zolgad.
It is. I saw this last weekend.
About 3 or 4 months later. I'm serious.
Oh, no.
Rays reportedly want a package that starts with Kepler. And if I'm the Twins, I'm asking, what else do they want?
Wow, dude. So Archer for Kepler.
Ooh. Plus more.
And more.
And more.
No. And more. And a prospect. But you know what? My partner has long told me, Judd, you can always find corner outfielders.
You can. Although Kepler's really good. Kepler's pretty damn good. Boy, that's a tough one. Well, it's not tough. Like, that would have been a bad trade.
That would have been a bad trade. That would have been, yes. No, that it's a good, this is a great tweet exposed. But
the whole premise,
at the
though,
time,
is they need a top-notch starter.
Look, Declan killed me 2 consecutive weeks because my Wiggy tweets were awful. Like, there's no defending him. I can't be here. But, I mean, come on. I mean, I was just flat out, at the time, stupid.
Listen, we were
at least
so
on
desperate
this one,
in 2017-18 for any glimmer.
Like, this is a bad tweet, but at least at the time, it wasn't a bad tweet from my end. The Wiggins tweets at the time were just as stupid then as they were today.
I love Greg just dunking on you. Archer's the pitcher the Rays hope to move. 4-plus ERA last 2 seasons and a 50-50, oh, the record, 51-60.
But he's missing.
Are you kidding, Judd?
But he's missing a comma, so there's a problem with that tweet. Are you kidding, comma, Judd?
Oh, boy. All right, well, I'm not alone.
Dex, nice work.
Luckily, this is it goes off a different path, but it does involve...
You're trying to get Christian Ponder back?
A Twins trade idea from a young sophomore in college, Declan, in 2012.
Drunk.
No! Twins need to stop floating Revere's name in trade talks. Hashtag, what are they doing?
I love the early Twitter use of hashtags, which, like, hashtags now are used for discovery. Like, And Twitter, like, people don't even really use hashtags on Twitter anyways. And it's only, like, marketing people use Twitter hashtags now. But back in the day, it was like you could use a hashtag to emphasize your point.
What are they doing?
What are they doing?
So how did you take it when he was dealt to the Phillies?
I was very upset. They had just dealt Denard Span a week before.
They had, yes. They were trying to get pitching.
And then all of a sudden, they were just going to let Ben Revere go. And I liked Ben Revere because he modeled my baseball career of no arm, really fast, and only hit singles.
Easily concussed.
Good guy. Stolen bases. Great dude.
Came on the show a couple times. Couldn't have been nicer.
I bet. And, you know, they got Trevor May out of him. So it turned out to be a pretty decent
trade. Know, though? Okay, so I'm going to give Declan a pass on this one because in Ben Revere's second year in Philadelphia, 2014.
God, you've gone soft.
Did you know that he led the major leagues in hits in 2014? He batted .306 with 184 hits, which led the league, and he stole 49 bases that year. That could have been a valuable part of those.
That was always
he stole how many bases?
Really good 2014.
How many?
He stole 49 bases in 2014.
Anyone steal 49 bases in 2020?
Oh.
Or 2019, I should say.
So,
2020
like
now, representative.
Billy Hamilton's about the only guy, and he's basically like the sixth outfielder with the Mets right now. Oh.
I got a question for you, Phil. I got a Guardy game to play. Off of this, I got a Guardy game to play. Give me the three most nonsensical things, because Revere definitely fits into this. Give me the three most nonsensical things that Guardy did.
Well, one of them involved Revere. So we all remember Ben Revere as having a noodle arm, right? One of the worst outfield arms you've probably ever seen.
Yeah.
Him and Johnny Damon, just...
It was like
the kid from Sandlot. Like, all right, so you put it in your hand, and you just let go. Once it gets out front, you just let go. So the Twins had two center fielders on their roster, and Denard Span and Ben Revere. This is like 2011, I want to say, 2012. It was probably 2012.
12 was the last year they were here.
So actually, let me see this. 2012, I got Ben Revere up here. Defense, standard fielding. So 2012, he played 121 games in the outfield. 84 of them were in right field. So Denard Span, who had played right field when Carlos Gomez was the starting center fielder in like 2008, 2009 at the Metrodome, and Denard Span was a great right fielder, if people remember.
Good arm.
Rangy. Like
he was a center fielder playing right. Yep. It made perfect sense.
One of the best defensive right fielders in all of baseball, and had a much better arm. He didn't exactly have like, you know, Dante Bichette 90s arm.
It was fine.
Yep, but it was a good enough arm.
Yep.
And Ben Revere had a terrible arm that you probably shouldn't even put in center field, quite frankly. It's like a left field arm.
Yeah, he's left field.
And Gardenhire didn't want to make, because Denard Span had some vertigo issues and some health issues, and I just want to make Denard comfortable. So Denard, we're going to keep him comfortable, keep him in center field, and put Ben Revere in right field. And I swear to God, like, there's probably stats on this. Every time there was a runner on first base and a hit to right field, the runner wouldn't even look to see where the ball was. He would just run straight second all the way around to third. First to third, train station with Ben Revere in right field. Super weird guardism. The other one has to be when Joe Mauer, MVP Joe Mauer, would take an off day.
Yes.
And you had this ridiculous lineup of like Justin Morneau and Kadire, and I can't remember if Torrey Hunter was still around, but I think he was. And Mike Rebin was the backup catcher, and he would fill in for Joe Mauer, not only as catcher, but also as the number three hitter.
Yeah.
And the right fielder would be playing in, like, just behind the second baseman because Mike Redmond was not capable of hitting a ball to the warning track.
What's the third one, then? Because I'll
give you the third one.
I would say Red Dog hitting third is one. Revere playing right is two.
Yeah, the third one's
easy.
And
then what's the third one?
The third one is slap-hitting number two hitters that most likely played second base. So, like, Matt Tolbert's going to be in the lineup for some godforsaken reason. And he's got to hit second because he knows how to handle the bat. And by handle the bat, meaning like, oh, he can drop a bunt down, maybe.
Right.
So Gardy would love to have...
He can ride out to second.
And the Twins always had pretty good leadoff hitters, right? Like Shannon Stewart, Denard Span, Luis Castillo. They always had guys. And then later on, even, like Denard Span went away and I can't remember. But they always had pretty good leadoff hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And they always had pretty good middle of the order guys like Mauer, Morneau, Kadire, just guys with some pop. Kubel before he got hurt again. But then there was just an automatic out in the two-hole. Automatic out every single time. Nick Punto in the down
years.
Did he
get the guy from second to third? Because, I mean, that's all you're worried about.
Yeah.
Move him over. So great job of hitting.
Those are the three guardiisms.
That's good. I love the first two.
Tweets exposed.
That's good, Declan.
Trivia question, since we're talking Ben Revere. How many career home runs did Ben Revere hit?
One.
No. I bet he
higher.
Six.
He hit none with the Twins.
Yeah.
Seven overall.
Hey,
nice job.
He wound up with, let's see here. He hit three in Philadelphia. He hit one with the Angels. He hit a couple with the Nationals and one with Toronto.
What was his last year?
2017.
Okay.
I don't think he played in the minors. No, actually, I take that back. He played in 2018. He did play 40 games AAA for the Angels. And then he played 8 games AAA for the Blue Jays in 2019, but never caught on. Just hung it up.
Faded away.
High fly, right center field. Going back is Naquin. That ball is gone. He hits Flo in right field.
In fact, he got a changeup and just clobbered it the other way.
We wrap with Royce every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday on the show, and you can find Pat's weekly podcasts. There are three of them. Royce Unchained, Royce on Baseball, which is part of the Scorner Twin Show, and then Monday Night Sports Talk is part of the Garage Logic Network. Pat, biggest win of the season last night for the Twins?
Well, I guess when you're only playing 60 of them, you could say that. It was. I would think if they win tonight, it'll be the biggest win of the season since they're facing Bieber. But, it was a nice win because, Maeda only gave them five. It was good. And then they had to... And slap the bolt tip pen together. Where was Duffy?
That's what I want to know, Pat. I was going to ask you that very question. Where do you think he was? I'm nervous.
I have sent out some inquiries and have not received a response.
Uh-oh.
So, I don't know what that could be. Just out of my business until they get on Zoom. But
proper.
Mm-hmm.
Reckless speculation. Sergio, two games in a row, right? And
yes.
Duffy,
no Duffy.
Either of them, right?
Rogers two games in a row as well.
Yes, and looked good last night. I thought that was nice. That's what I call a big league save. People are getting on me. I tweeted that out. It's a big league save, and they said, "Well, what else would it be?" Listen, dummies, there are three displays of competence on a baseball field, right? There's routine, there's good, and there's big league. If you hung around old baseball guys, you know, Willie Mays ran back to the fence and caught the ball over his shoulder in the 1954 World Series, and they say, that was a big league play. There's nothing higher than a big league play, and that was a big league save. So, you know, because he's facing the part of the order, the only part of their order that makes you nervous, right?
Yeah, the top.
From Cleveland, yeah. Man, are they anemic offensively. Whew.
Down at the bottom, man.
Yeah.
Their outfield has been, has been really punchless since they let Brantley go, and that was a disaster for them, man, letting him get out of there.
Pat, will there come a point at all where the Twins regret trading Brusdar Graterol for Kenta Maeda?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I was thinking maybe, but you got him for three more years, guys, and he's he's not going to pitch 200 innings, but he'll pitch 150 or 160, and man, that's a good breaking ball he's got. I just love the way he throws that pitch, and it's just kind of smooth and I don't think so. I don't know. Graterol's been okay so far, right? But not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, he's...
And it looks like he's a reliever. I don't think so. I was wondering a little earlier. I only saw him like twice in spring training and then in an inter-squad game. And all I'd seen was, you know, his reputation was as a nibbler. And a couple of times I saw him, it looked like a short, Kirk Gibson, Kyle Gibson, Kyle Gibson, I get him screwed up. Kyle Gibson.
They are very, very similar careers, Kirk and Kyle Gibson.
Yes, yeah.
Both competitors, too. Intense competitors. Kyle was an incredible competitor.
They were both involved in home runs. by the way, I didn't look to see how Lance Lynn did last night.
No.
137 ERA.
Yeah, he might be traded, Pat.
Dude. What the hell is this?
He might be traded by Monday.
Guess what? They're going to get more for him than the Twins did.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Why? So Texas, even though they're 500, has given up. No, wait, they're 11 and 17. They're not 500. The American League, you look at the American League, you pretty well got your eight playoff teams already unless something happens. There's a clear demarcation line. And I think you were pointing out yesterday that in the National League, there's going to be like 7 and 8 are going to end up being like those NBA teams that used to go to the playoffs going 36 and 46, you know. So, but I thought the boys, that was a stout effort last night. Although, you know who they don't want to see again? That relief pitcher. What is it?
The guy who has like 30 strikeouts in 14 innings or something? Okay, can we talk about that guy? So that guy looks like he's going to cause some problems. He's got that like flip the ball up in the air thing between pitches and
constantly moving.
Yeah,
on the rubber.
Oh, but man, alive! That split finger thing he throws. That poor Miguel. He struck out. That was old fashioned worst ever, Miguel. I mean, he hit the home run and he's been hot, but that ball bounced in the left-handed batter's box at 55 feet and pounced and he swung at it. He had better chance against that. He said, no thank you, sir, and I don't want another.
I'm out of here.
The guy's name is James Karinchak, and he wears, for anyone paying attention at home, he wears number 99 for the
Charlie
Cleveland Indians.
Charlie Sheen tweeted him, congratulations. Yep.
He wears Rick Wildthing Vaughn's number for... which is amazing. He's a reliever. He has 30 strikeouts in 15 and two-thirds innings so far this season. So he has struck out, of the outs he has generated, two out of every three are strikeouts. And he made, you bring up that, whatever that, like, breaking ball splitter thing is, So Nelson Cruz was the first batter he faced. He started one of those up at like Nelson Cruz's eyes, and it dove down to the belt. And Cruz like kind of check swung.
You think
late.
The baseball scuffed up, boys?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I don't know if it scuffed up, but it was man, it was something. And I saw him. You know, he pitched against him when that first series a couple of times. And where the hell did this guy come from? Apparently, he was up last September, but I couldn't remember seeing
yeah.
him.
Well, the Indians just constantly just pull random guys out. Oh, we're gonna send Clevinger and Plesac out because we just don't need them
yeah,
anymore.
And have the kids start yeah. against 10
well,
strikeouts.
The other day, they called up some kid that I'd never heard of who, you know, went 7 and struck out 10.
Yep.
Some damn thing. And
Sunday.
His major league debut. But meanwhile, they don't have any hitters. Apparently, they don't have any hitters in the system here. So, wow. If you get through Ramirez, this guy they got from Philadelphia is playing okay. Right, Hernandez. Or Dodgers, they get him from the Dodgers. Where'd they get that Hernandez? Cesar Hernandez from. He's okay. And then you got Ramirez, and then you got Lindor, and then Carlos Santana gets you a walk. He won't get many hits.
Hey,
that's it.
I'm sorry. I have to go back to this Karinchak guy. I just looked up his. So last year, he rocketed through the system last year. He pitched a double in AAA last year, Pat. He had 30 innings, so 90 outs. He generated 90 outs. Wow. How many of those 90 outs in his 2019 minor league season would you guys guess were strikeouts?
56.
Judd?
65.
74.
Holy.
Modern baseball, baby. Modern
22
baseball.
Strikeouts per 9 innings was his rate for the full season last year.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I don't know how this happened. You know, is he the guy who's from, like, Bryant College?
Yes, he went to Bryant.
How the hell could he be at Bryant College?
Smithfield, Rhode Island.
Yeah. The way that ball moves, I think he might have learned some very important things about physics at Bryant and how to scuff baseballs.
Yeah.
I think that might be what Bryant taught him.
Maybe. Man alive, it was something. But, yeah, they're 20-10. They're, you know, I'm worried about their hitting, and they're all these slop ball and relievers drive me nuts. And and they're 20-10, tied for the best record in the American League. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know what to do. You know what? I was just thinking, boys, though, we've never had a peer MVP win a MVP. You know, I never had a peer DH win an MVP award. And if indeed the BBWAA is going to vote on the awards, that assuming we get to the finish of a season, I would guess they have. I haven't heard anything different. This could be the year of Nelly Cruz, right?
I brought that up on the show. Absolutely, yes.
On a 60-game season, we're
Amen.
Playing in the field. We're playing in the field becomes much less important. I think it could happen. Now, there have been guys who should have been DHs. Frank Thomas, you know, was on his way to becoming a DH, and one year he only started 99 games at first base. And, you know, Jim Rice won it when he was still playing in the outfield in his own inimitable style. And, you know, so there's – and Giambi won it, but he played in the field mostly that year too.
Yeah.
But nobody that was just a D – so those are four guys you look at now as DHs, but they weren't DHs when they won it.
Well, in the –
Donnie Baylor, too. He was still playing in the field.
Also, so he's tied for – I believe he's tied for the American League lead with Jose Abreu with 11 home runs after last night. A lot of the newer writers are looking at least at wins above replacement as kind of a gauge of like, all right, who's performing. So Nelson Cruz right now in the American League is third in wins above replacement, behind Anthony Rendon, who's playing for a losing team that's not going to make the playoffs, the Angels. Brandon Lowe for the Rays, who just came out of nowhere. He's like a second baseman, outfielder.
Yeah.
And then Kyle Lewis with the Mariners is off to a really good start.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
They're not going to win.
They're awful.
So basically, and then behind him, you got to get to Jose Abreu, the next playoff team, and then maybe Mark Canha with the A's?
Yeah.
But that's it. Like, actually, you know who else is off to a great start and is ninth on this list is our guy Robbie Grossman. Who has Robbie Grossman?
Listen to that laugh, that evil laugh.
Nobody's Braves ever won the MVP because they walked a lot.
Robbie Grossman is a .427 on base percentage.
Analytics darling, Royce.
Swing the bat, you jerk. He won't swing.
It's amazing. Yeah, I think Cruz is probably the favorite right now.
Analytics darling, Robbie Grossman.
Here, Abreu is probably the favorite. But here's the thing about Cruz is what makes him amazing. His first at bat on Sunday, no chance, right? Who the hell is pitching? And then, you know, he kind of goes around and has a lousy day, and you guys have left 50 guys on base and couldn't get a hit, and then he comes up in the ninth inning, hits a home run, and he's in the ballgame because he hit a home run in the ninth inning. He doesn't, unlike Miguel against Karanchik, he doesn't give up at bats. He might strike out, but it isn't that he can't wait to strike out like Miguel. I'm swinging at this one if it's in the stadium.
Yeah.
I have no chance against this guy. Get me to the dugout.
Pat, we will talk to you tomorrow, sir.
Another gorgeous day for a ball game.
It is.
Pitch Tyler Duffy. I'm nervous.
I'm checking on it. Goodbye.
All right. See you, Pat. Get back to me if you find out. Bye.
Rapping with Racy.
I'm very nervous.
Dude, think about that. So that dude, this cringe knack or whatever.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Dude, he generated 90 outs and 74 strikeouts last year.
But that pitch to Cruz that you're talking about did not move like a human being can move the baseball.
Are you accusing this
man? Oh, I'm saying that ball had a gash in it. You know,
they change the ball out every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm saying that he took the ball and he put he took some type of sandpaper or something and he cut it.
Careful, you're going to get chirped at on Twitter for takes
whoa,
like
whoa,
that.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Whoa,
whoa. Oh, no. Not that. People won't like me on Twitter. Oh, where do I sign up?
That's a wrap on this episode of Mackie and Judd. We appreciate you hanging out with us and we'll see you tomorrow for Write That Down and an Accountability Session.